Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey everybody, welcome to the newest edition of the Land O'Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Joined this week by the big wheel down there at the Cracker Factory that is Silver Screen and Roll, Harrison Fagan. How are you? Good to see you, bud.
I appreciate it. I'm not sure how I feel about big wheel at the Cracker Factory. I'm not
It's a Simpsons reference.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, I mean, I know I haven't been outside in a long time, Brian, but I don't think I'm like that pale yet. I mean, maybe I am, but that was kind of a pre-pandemic thing.
I thought you were about to wade into some very dicey racial territory there for a second as well.
No, I'm good.
It's the place where all white people come from.
No, I'll take the first interpretation. Thank you very much.
Yes. You never know. All right, so a lot we want to get into tonight. Sunday, of course, the All-Star game, and we have some reaction to that. Really, the most interesting stuff happened earlier in Adam Silver's weekend big press conference-y thing. So we'll talk about that stuff, and we'll get into the big stuff with the Lakers. First half questions. Each of us has a thing that we thought was really particularly interesting about the first half and something we're looking forward to the second half. We'll do all that with Harrison. Hold tight, Harrison, because before Andy and I need to tell you a few things. The first thing is you should go check out betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way for you to get in on all your sports action. The NBA, full swing, college basketball. It's March Madness time. I didn't know that, but
March 18th.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Time is flying. I can't be expected to keep track of things in a pandemic. The March Madness tournament, that means $100,000 bracket madness contest at BetOnline. It's the spot to be for all your bracketology needs. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. You can place your bets there, and it's free to sign up. So head over to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% off as a welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sports book experts.
Also, the Land O'Lakers podcast, as always, brought to you by the folks at Delicious Pizza. Two locations, West Adams and Hollywood, 20% off if you use the password Cam Brothers. It is awesome pizza. You are supporting local business at a time when that is extremely important. You are also supporting the local business of a massive Laker fan who is likely listening right now and really, really appreciates your business. Again, two locations, West Adams and Hollywood, 20% off if you use the password Cam Brothers. Delicious pizza.
Harrison, let me make you a recommendation. One thing you could do, I don't know how you like to spend your money, but you could make a bunch of bets at betonline.ag and then order a bunch of pizza and sort of stress eat it while the games are being played. And you're really kind of killing two birds with one stone there.
I actually respect the realness of you not saying that I could take my winnings and buy a bunch of pizza. Like, you know me well enough to know that I'm not actually going to pick a bunch of winners at BetOnline necessarily. But, you know, I would need some pizza to, you know, drown my sadness. I'm not a good gambler.
I'm not saying you wouldn't win, but that is, you know, sort of a very pessimistic way to kind of look at the whole process for sure.
I'm not a good gambler, I will say. Like, my few times doing it, I have not come out ahead. I think actually the only winning bet I've ever placed on a sports team was I placed basically like a bet of sadness on the Lakers to win 2017 Summer League, I believe it was, because I was like, well, I'm going to have to stay out here in the stuck here longer to keep covering this team. I might as well make some money off of it. And, you know, they ended up going on and taking the title. Well,
any wager on the Summer League is a wager of sadness by definition.
As they call him around the office, old Harrison, the Lions are due Fagan. this is their year. What'd you think of the All-Star game?
Confirm I have not bet on the Lions, though. I'm not that inept. Yeah.
My big takeaway from the All-Star game, which we all watched Sunday night, was, you know, remember last year, guys, the Elam ending, everybody dug in and they were like, the competition for those last few points was like incredibly fierce. This year, that fourth quarter, Team LeBron got out of there. Like that fourth quarter was over in like 37 seconds, it seemed like. Nobody was sticking around.
Team KD didn't even want to be there anymore. They were just like they completely, they were ready to go home. They're like, oh, you know, we've lost all three quarters. Our charity probably hates us. And like, let's just take the L and go home. And Dame and Steph were pulling up from half court. It was the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen. And I kind of, in a weird way, loved it more than last year because of the disrespect factor.
When Dame hit that final shot, because of course, Damian Lillard hit the final shot to close things out. And he did the Dame time gesture, the tapping of the imaginary watch. That felt more like when Indiana Jones shot the swordsman, like just to make the thing go away, than actually a Dame time moment. That just felt like Damian Lillard literally looking at his watch and being like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, I'm hitting this shot. We're leaving. I am so done with this thing.
It's about Dame time to go home from this pandemic all-star game.
Exactly, exactly. It was very like LeBron. I loved in the beginning, like in the first couple minutes, LeBron, the captain of Team LeBron, who did not play in the second half, LeBron hit a reverse dunk. And after that, his whole energy was basically, look, I gave y'all a reverse dunk. Now get off my ass. I'm not doing anything else. Like, leave me alone. I'm just like, every time the ball came to him, he was hot potatoing it. He's like, I have no interest in anything going on.
Yeah, I think the players almost did a form of protest of the All-Star game by playing like, you know, like, not, I don't want to say the dumbest basketball possible, but like they were taking insane, you know, heat check shots the entire game. And they just were so good that they were going in. It almost made it like weird. Like,
I saw a lot of that opinion on Twitter tonight when the game. And I think some of that might have been projection from people like us, who see the fundamental stupidity of having this game played this year. Because I think all of us on one level or another, agree, we all understand why, and we all get it. But, you know, the players weren't happy about it. I don't think the league was particularly smart about how they did it. But it was a little bit hard for me objectively to sort of distinguish the shot taking or the defensive effort in this game to other All-Star games that I've witnessed. I mean, I saw a lot of people like, these guys aren't playing any defense.
This seemed a little more heat checkish than normal, like, to me, I guess. And like also LeBron, I mean, you guys know this, but when he says something, it's never without thinking a whole lot about it and being very intentional and whatever. Like, I don't think that him sitting out the second half was because his team was so far ahead and so talented. Like, I think that was very intentional. Like, I'm going to come, I'm not going to get the fine, but then I am sitting out because you're telling me that we had to have this 2-month turnaround and I am chasing a title this year.
No, it was basically double middle fingers. Like, yeah. I did what you asked of me. I put on a show with that reverse dunk, like I said earlier, threw a couple fancy passes, leave me the hell alone. Like, I actually joked on Twitter that the first time, it turned out, I believe the only time, LeBron checked out of the game, I was like, if I were him, I would have been changing into my street clothes on the bench. Like, I'd just been like, I'm done. Like, it turned out I wasn't that far off. Like, but I'd be like, no, seriously, I am finished. Like, more than anybody here, I need the rest. Go fuck yourselves. I'm done. And
he did all he was required to do. He started in the game. And like, you know, look, the NBA should have put fine print in that saying that he needed to play at least 20 minutes if they wanted him to play.
I don't even think the league cares. I think they were fine.
No, I don't think so.
Once that thing was on TV, everybody was good to go. I mean, this gets to, you know, I'm not a huge All-Star game guy. I don't really care. I think the Elam ending stuff last year helped make it a little bit more fun and a little bit more entertaining. I just, you know, this year, I don't object to, you know, it's great. You know, shining a light on HBCUs is a great thing. And there was a big push throughout the weekend to use black owned businesses and, you know, black artists and all these other things. We talked about this on the late night happy hour with Trevon Edwards the other night. Like, it got to the point where the NBA almost seemed like it was trying a little too hard. It was almost I think the word I used was, what's it called when you hold somebody hostage?
extortion?
Extortionist. Yes. Like, if you don't get behind us here, guys, look, we're doing all this great work for these causes that that so many of you have gone out and championed. You know, this is what we're doing this weekend. That's what this weekend is about. It's just nothing about the game, nothing about any of it, I think, came off in a way that would make anybody happy. I don't know. I mean, Harrison, what you're thinking?
Yeah, it just felt very, kind of like you were saying, exploitative of good causes to kind of shield them from criticism, where it just felt to a degree like they were saying, you know, well, you can't criticize us holding this All-Star game because look at all the good that this is doing. This mm-hmm. is for charity. This is not a cash grab. We are giving away all the cash. Don't ask us how much we're making. We're giving away all the cash, you know, in these charitable donations. And it also felt a lot like they were really trying to, and it was one of these things where it just feels like they're trying to play to the Twitter crowd, but not actually do the things that will make them happy, but just trying to blow as little goodwill from the bubble and from how they handled everything there in terms of the activism as well as possible. It just felt like they were trying to just not lose all of that kind of capital that they had gained throughout that whole process.
Well, I mean, as a veteran of Twitter, and specifically NBA Twitter, I would advise the league, it can't be made happy, so don't bother trying.
Trying to appease NBA Twitter has been like their strategy for the last like probably 5 to 7 years. Like,
no, but you
yeah,
know
it's not helpful.
You can appease momentarily in pockets, but you will never make them happy. So again, I wouldn't bother trying.
There's only one thing that's unified Twitter that I've noticed in the last like decade, and that's Ted Lasso. It is literally the only thing that everyone on Twitter agrees on.
But like when Adam Silver has said a couple times, you know, with the context being trying to get as few people in Atlanta as possible during this weekend by continually saying this is a television event. What he's really saying is this is a television revenue event. Like that is why we are doing it without explicitly saying it. And in a lot of ways, I think the league would have actually been better off saying, we want this event to be two things. A, we want it to be something that can raise awareness for HBCUs and Black businesses, Black artists, try to help them out from our presence here this weekend. But it is also an opportunity to make back some of the revenue. Like I think they actually would have looked better if they were just more transparent about it, because it's so incredibly obvious.
I mean, it wasn't like they didn't talk about it, but they didn't put that front and center. That you're right, they probably should have.
Because everybody knows why they're doing it, and everybody, I think, understands it. But like to Harrison's point earlier, you look like you are using these HBCUs and Black artists, Black businesses as meat shields. And it's not a good look, but I don't think it's necessary anyway. You're never going to convince that same NBA Twitter that this is a good, necessary idea because, frankly, it's not practical. So if you're going to do it, just be transparent about why you're doing it. Don't try so hard.
Yeah, no one wants to feel like you're being talked down to or misled or lied to or whatever. And that was just, I think that was more how it felt. It's like, not that the NBA doesn't genuinely want to help out any of these causes. Sure. I know they do, but that's not the reason you're holding the game. So don't tell me it is. The reason you're holding the game is to make up TV revenue. They were transparent in saying this is one of our highest viewed events of the year. And so it's, you know, like
again, you're
to your
coming
point,
close
Ryan,
to saying it. You're coming.
Yeah,
close.
They were very, very close to the line, but not actually like getting there. And I agree with you. I feel like if they would have just came out and said, look, like we have to do this for revenue purposes. Here's why, like we're projected to lose this percentage of revenue. The TV networks really want us to do it. And so here's how we are trying to make sure that some good comes of this as well.
They should have just treated it like those Hulu commercials where they just keep adding on things like that, like Dame Lillard just says to make more money. And I think everybody would have appreciated it. The big news though, honestly, the thing that, in terms of significance, significant things that really do impact the players in the league, I think came over the weekend where Adam Silver said that the league would not be mandating vaccines for players. this struck me as a, of course they wouldn't, but again, the sort of many members of the media around it, a lot of the fan reaction. I thought Harrison, I was surprised at how surprised people seemed that the league wasn't going to be mandating this.
Yeah, and then the same thing. You know, Silver said that, and then there was LeBron said that he wasn't going to comment on whether or not he and his family were going to take the vaccine. That was something he wanted to. He ducked the question, and he didn't say he wasn't going to take it, but he didn't say he was, and said basically it's none of your business. Which, hey, like, you know, it's on one hand, it's hard for me to blame him completely for that, because, like, look, if you don't want to come out on one side of this or the other as like a guy with his platform or whatever, like, I mean, I guess, you know, Republicans or anti-vaxxers buy sneakers too. I don't know. Like, it's just like, I'm being offhanded, but like, it's to me, you know, I just think that there was all this reaction basically at what Silver was saying and at what the players were saying and what the players were not saying. And yeah, it feels like this stuff has been building for a while. You know, we got a couple reports early on that there was some skepticism about vaccines from some of the players because of the way that dating all the way back to the Tuskegee experiments, how Black people have kind of been like misled by doctors or like a distrust in public health initiatives and things like that.
Yes.
That dates in that community. That is justified, I think, based on historical kind of inadequacies and historical issues in our society. But it also, like, you know, I just think that, yeah, it's like you said, this is not surprising that the players are kind of like not all on board with this. And because of that, it's not surprising that the NBA is not going to pick a fight with the players' union about making this mandatory.
First of all, I mean, that is a practical and PR nightmare that I don't think the league would really want to see, like, you know, an outward fight between labor and ownership about actually getting the vaccine. You know, as far as LeBron's comments,
plus, too, you're going to draw the line and say, like, you know, I'm just make up a name, you know, blank player, you cannot play. Because and then, you know, what does the union do? But yeah, I mean, you're right.
Yeah, it's a nightmarish fight. I think yes. Adam Silver is correct that the overwhelming majority, if not possibly even all the players, will end up getting it because it will make their professional lives a hell of a lot simpler. And they'll have to undergo far less testing. Protocols, everything will just become simplified. In LeBron's case, like, look, would it be potentially helpful if he was somebody front and center on vaccine awareness, things like that? Of course, like, that would be great, but it's also not mandatory on his part. I don't think it's fair to expect him to do this if for no other reason than, I mean, beyond the historical implications that you were talking about, Harrison, that I think are real, LeBron's not a science expert. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of putting his own face in front, you know, in his voice and his platform in front of this vaccine may just not be something he feels comfortable or knowledgeable enough doing. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of telling other people, hey, you go get this vaccine. Like, if he were not entirely comfortable on this, and look, it may be as simple as not wanting people to debate the access that he has or anything like that. You know, and wondering
or maybe he's not somebody who's completely sold on the efficacy or the safety of the vaccine.
Sure. Whatever it may be. But I believe very strongly that if you're not fully comfortable speaking about something, then you are not a good spokesperson by definition. And if for whatever reason LeBron isn't comfortable going in depth about his vaccination plans, I don't think anybody should be reading that much into it, but also demanding that he step outside that comfort zone. I don't think that's his responsibility.
No, I also think some of this too is a little bit unfair on the part of, like, I guess us, the media. And I mean, not that I was planning on going to a bunch of press conferences and asking guys for their opinions on vaccination, but it's like, you're kind of setting them up to where one group is going to be mad at them no matter what they say. And I understand why the question gets asked, but I also just think that, like, it's not our right to know necessarily everything that these guys have to say on every single topic, even though we're provided freedom sometimes to ask them. And I also think that, like, some of the subtext of this too is, I believe there was a government official that basically said, basically challenged LeBron to take the vaccine to, like, get the black community on board with this. And, like, if in the wake of that, he's not comfortable, like, saying, like, oh, I'm not going to give in to this and just, like, do that, then I also kind of understand that aspect of it, even if I don't agree with him. Like, for me, you know, just look, being completely candid, I'm going to get this thing as soon as I possibly can. And I don't know how you guys feel and whatever, but I also, like,
Harrison's currently altering his ID to say he's 78 years old.
Yeah, I have like a Mrs. Doubtfire level costume I'm getting ready, like, to head in there. And yeah, no, I think,
I've been, like, blogging since 1947.
I'm here for my vaccination, Sonny.
I mean, or I could just take one of your guys' cards. I'm sure you're getting, like, close, right? Like,
ouch.
Ouch. Andy, actually, it's funny. Andy, you know, you mentioned guys, like, in commercials, like, doing the PSAs and stuff. Andy went to high school with Bill Russell. Yes. So, you could at least ask him, like, how that went.
He dunked on my ass. Oh. It was not even funny.
No, couldn't slow him down. That's for sure.
No, I required a double when he booked.
But, like, it's the thing about, like, I think the NBA is smart, as Andy says. Like, you can't pick a fight over the union on this. First of all, like, if people are suspicious and they're like, you can't make, like, the union is not going to agree to mandatory vaccinations. They will never do it, even if most of the vast majority of membership wants to get vaccinated, but just if for no other reason than the precedent of allowing the league to mandate medical procedures, even those that seem necessary and probably completely harmless in the grand scheme of things. The league's not, the Players Association's not going to do that. You can't give up that kind of control unless you absolutely have to. And they don't.
And also, it's like there's something to be said for if they do try to mandate something like that. And, like, let's say, you know, actually, I'm not even going to name a player because I don't want to imply that they're
right. Just by the hypothetical,
like,
exactly.
A star or, like, you know, someone, a high level NBA player that people have heard of or household name is, like, ruled out for parts of the season because they don't want to take on the vaccine. Like, not only does that completely torpedo that player's, you know, just, like, their brand recognition with certain people and, like, the, you know, that not only does that offend certain fans that are like, why are, you know, they feel like the league's out to get them or they're mad at the player for not taking it or whatever, but then it also emboldens people who are like, well, if so-and-so doesn't trust the vaccine, then maybe, you know, maybe it's not so great. And, like, you know, I don't think that there's anyone who really is like the other part about this is, like, it's such a straw man to me. Like, I don't feel like there's anyone that is hesitant about this vaccine that is sitting there like, well, you know, I guess if it's good enough for LeBron, like, you know, I guess I can take it. Like,
there's also
don't think that that's how this stuff works. You know,
there are probably some people, probably not in the NBA, but maybe, but, like, there are probably people who are influenced by seeing people good. And I don't want to speak out of turn in the sense of, like, you know, I've read the same stuff we have all read and heard, yeah. And people speak about the mistrust in public health that long history that you mentioned earlier, Harrison. But I don't want to pretend that I, like, I'm part of that or I understand it. But
yeah,
there may be people who
clear. There are plenty of white people in this country who distrust the vaccine and are going to be
but the circumstances are different.
No, the circumstances are different. I just want to I think it's worth noting that just in terms of making sure that no demographic gets painted with too sort of specific a broad brush, if that makes
sure.
Sense.
Also note just like that all these vaccines, like, you know, from everything that I'm sure all of us have read are incredibly effective and and harmless. Like there just are a statistically insignificant amount of side effects so far.
Incredibly remarkable marvels of modern medical. God, yeah. I'm alliterating, achievement. And, you know, I think ultimately what's going to happen is everybody just needs to slow down. But it's, you know, the soft power here that the league has, as Andy alluded to, less testing. You get vaccinated, you don't have to test anymore. You get, vaccinated, you can have people, you can have your family, your friends, relatives, girlfriends, whatever in your hotel room. You can have social gatherings of 15 people.
No limits
people.
On close personal friends on the road.
Right.
All
you
that
want your
stuff.
Insta models back, get vaccinated.
Right. Want to get into some Lakers stuff here. First half, surprises and storylines. Second half, things that we're all kind of interested in looking for. Before we do that, though, brief moment here to talk about our newest sponsor, eBay, where the rare dead stock or the latest releases, you find the exact shoe you're looking for. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is a place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, the logo, the stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. And each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. So go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. All right, guys. So the Lakers have kind of limped, I think is a good way of putting it, into the All-Star break. Didn't look particularly good for reasons we all understand. They didn't have any players, but they're 24-13. They are 3-7 in their last 10 games heading into the break. Want to talk first about storylines, the things that surprised you, the things that you found most interesting about the first half of the season. Harrison, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think the thing for me is just, I mean, you guys remember all the offseason talk, and I'm sure everybody listening to this remembers all the offseason talk of, is this the best Lakers roster ever? Is this the deepest Lakers team ever? Like, top to bottom, oh man, the defending champions just got better, they just upgraded, and I still think that a lot of those things are probably true on paper, as well as, like, when the playoffs start and this team is kind of, like, as long as everyone's reasonably healthy, I think a lot of those things can still be true. But the results so far have not borne that out, I think it's fair to say, based on, you know, your lead into this segment. And I just think that the thing that's surprising to me is from the first half is not just that, but more specifically, how many questions this team has left to answer. I think that it just felt like this team was mostly a finished product. You know, they already won the title last year. They're bringing most of the core back, and then they seem to have upgraded on the fringes in terms of the role guys and things like that, like the Marc Gasol for the veterans minimum, and Wes Matthews is a really good guy that they can throw in there, and maybe he can replicate Danny Green for, you know, like 1/15th of the price, and, you know, in shooting that has proven true, but in other areas, maybe not. And, you know, like, I think that it's just, I was not expecting to be heading towards the trade deadline and the buyout deadline with, like, oh, the Lakers have two open roster spots, and it's not like, oh, like, maybe take a shot on Dion or JR and see if they have anything left, and if maybe this gives you another guy. It's like, dude, the Lakers really need to sign someone to plug a hole right now in their roster and kind of address a weakness. And, you know, on one hand, I'm not that worried about this team, but I do think that it would be, you know, intellectually dishonest for us to not suggest that there are questions about mm-hmm. them and questions about this roster in terms of, like, is Marc Gasol going to be enough at center to get by in the playoffs? I think that he's been better than he's largely getting credit for, but I also don't think that he is maybe, I do think that you're starting to see the signs of the decline a little bit with him. And then, you know, the thing that has really stood out to me is all of the Trez stuff over the last couple weeks, where it's really, really clear that Frank Vogel does not trust him on defense, no matter what he says in press conferences and things like that, because it's like, I forget who used this analogy. It might've even been one of you guys about, like, the Goldilocks, you know, like the Goldilocks matchup for him of, like, you know, if you're playing against a team that's too big, it's like, oh, well, Trez wasn't the answer tonight. But if you're playing against a team that's too small, it's like, well, Trez is a center and he can't keep up with those guys. And it's like, you can only pull him or keep his minutes down so many times before it's very clear that you don't trust his defense, especially when the Lakers are missing as many guys as they're missing right now. And, you know, like, I wonder if, and it's not going to happen if he doesn't want it to happen or if his reps don't want it to happen, because he's very famously repped by Clutch Sports. But, like, I do wonder if we hear something about the Lakers sniffing around what he could get them in a trade, or if he works to, you know, bring someone like PJ Tucker back or whatever. And again, this is not, like, I'm not saying do this right now. I'm just curious to see if it starts to happen, because I think that he can be used better than he's been used so far. Maybe he starts to pick up some of the defensive stuff, but right now it just doesn't look like Vogel trusts him in situations that matter. And then in that case, I'm not really sure how much the offensive upside he gives you is even important.
Andy, when to sort of the first part of Harrison's, observation here, I think this is like a huge storyline. Like when you look at this stuff, because we all said the same thing. I agree with Harrison before the season started. How well do you think the upgrades, in the air quotes, have worked? Like, players have panned out and which ones haven't?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, and I'll answer part of this briefly because I don't want to spend too long on the question just because it's going to get into one of my first half observations.
Okay.
But Trez has been exactly what I thought he would be. Because if you remember, Brian, like I, when they signed him, my expectation was he is largely a regular season guy. He is somebody that they are looking to bring in to soup up the regular season, provide some punch off the bench. You know, it ended up a different circumstance with Anthony Davis because he ended up injured. But, take some of that pressure off AD in terms of what you need in front court scoring. In the playoffs, I don't expect him to be a major factor. I wasn't concerned about whether or not he could close games because I didn't think he'd be really that high on the list anyway. And I didn't care. Like, mm-hmm. I was fine with that. And along those lines, I actually think that Trez has basically been doing exactly what I expected and often doing it pretty well. The context of what you're talking about, Harrison, with his defense and Vogel's lack of trust, I think is totally true. But it really only becomes magnified if AD isn't there. Because AD is ultimately their closing center. You know what I mean? And Mark, I think Mark has been, I agree with you, he's been better on balance than I think he often gets credit for. But I also have been disappointed in just how little of an offensive factor he's often been, whether a reluctance to put up shots or the team not finding as many ways to use him as a hub, facilitating that sort of thing. He's been kind of disappointing along those lines. Like sometimes the counting stats actually do matter. And in his case, he kind of needs to pick up his counting stats. Wes has been disappointing. Wes Matthews. Yeah. And early on in the season, I actually defended him more against a lot of criticism because I thought some of it was overblown. And, a lot of his advanced stats, I'm like, if you played him with LeBron and the starters, his numbers would look just fine. But he's the last few weeks has not been great at all. And you wonder once the playoffs roll around and rotations start to shrink anyway, how big a factor he's going to be. But Schroeder, though, after a really hot start and then a middle section where he was very quietly slumping offensively, his value was really demonstrated through his absence. Yes. Just how important he is on this team. And that really was my first half takeaway for both of you guys, was just how important he's emerged really on both sides of the ball and all the different versatility options that he gives Frank Vogel. He is without question their second best playmaker and shot creator that isn't LeBron. His ability to combine scoring and playmaking from the backcourt is by far the best on this team. And defensively, he is much better than I thought he'd be. Like, I had some skepticism that his success in OKC was more about playing with Chris Paul and Lou Dort and Steven Adams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and basically being able to get by because he was often with those guys. And as it turns out, he's just much more competitive, more disruptive, and more effective on that end. And he's because of all the different things that he can do for this team, like, he's somebody that Frank Vogel can put out there in closing moments, whether the Lakers are defending a lead, whether they're trying to come back into a game, whether it's really tight. Like, he can be viable in all three. Yeah. And the importance of him on this team, I think, has really been demonstrated.
It's funny, Harrison, like, I was talking, I think it was on Spectrum on last week at some point, but it was after Schroeder came back, and the most telling statistic, to Andy's point, was that the number of free throws they averaged when both AD and Schroeder were out was, I believe, 17 a game. when Schroeder was there and AD was out, it was 29. Like, just, you know, and for a team that doesn't score much, that's a huge difference. Like, that's massive.
Yeah, that helps quite a bit. And he's been, like, you know, to your question, he's been the one guy, you know, new addition, undisputedly has been, you know, a plus. I think even more so, even above, has played maybe even above expectations, because he certainly has exceeded mine in terms of his importance. You know, I was joking on Silver Screen Roll, you know, a couple weeks ago that, like, you know, his agent right now was like counting his commission fees while watching the Lakers, you know, go 0-4 without him, and then how good they looked as soon as he returned and all of that stuff. And, you know, I just think that he has, you know, more so than anyone, really had like a plus first half of the season. I mean, right. I guess other than LeBron's had a great first half of the season.
Sure, but I would say if you had to pick one guy of all the new guys that they brought in to play well, you could only pick one, you'd pick him. And he actually, to pull an Andy here and tease what's coming up, he plays importantly into my second half curiosity that I'll get to in a second. But for me, the thing that struck me most after all of this, you know, Harrison, your point about the new roster and, you know, dial it up, like, you know, championships theirs and all this stuff. And they got off to such a great start shooting and all of this stuff. Our concerns about this team are remarkably similar to what they were last year. It's health, obviously, first and foremost. It's, can they shoot the ball well enough? They're 24th right now in three-point percentage at 35%. Last year, they finished 21st at 35%. They're 25th right now in free throw shooting, 74%. Last year, they were 73%. That was 29th. This year, they're 25th in turnovers, 15 a game. Last year, they were 22nd in turnovers, 15 a game. Like, for all the hand-wringing over Marc Gasol and defense, there's not enough rim protection. The defense was awesome last year, and it's awesome this year. It looks a little different.
Yeah, no, the rim protection thing is like that's not a real point to me. That's just like you're watching Marc Gasol like the three times he does get blown by, and you're not watching the rest of the possessions.
Like, right, it's like they're fine. Like they're all of that, like the defense is great. Like, stop.
The thing that I keep saying is, like, if you think that JaVale McGee was like the difference between this team and this year and last year or whatever, then like you must have thought he was making a hell of a difference screaming at shooters from the bench, you know, during the playoffs and stuff like that, because like he wasn't a real fact. Like, that's not a real thing. When I'm talking about Gasol, I'm talking more to Andy's point about just being a little disappointed with the offensive output more so than anything, because I think defensively he's been fine. Like, he's not Dwight of last year, but Dwight of this year is not Dwight of last year. And it kind of plays into, you know, this is something that I'm thinking of maybe writing on at some point, but like, so I guess I'll spoil it a little bit, but like, I'm wondering, it just feels like center production, if you're not one of these guys that's in the MVP conversation, is down across the league. It just feels like no team is happy with their centers for the most part. Right. And I wonder if some of that is, with that big of a body, just the turnaround is tougher on a lot of these guys.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
An interesting point. But are you guys, am I the only one who thinks that, like, I find myself in this incredibly weird deja vu moment where it's like, well, shit, we're still talking about the shooting and we're still talking about turnovers. And they like, the offense is, if they lose the title this year, if they do not go back to back, it's either going to be because somebody got hurt, it happens, or they can't score. They don't score enough. I don't think it's because they collapse defensively. That's not going to be the reason they lose, at least to me.
Yeah, the most surprising thing that you said there was that there are six teams shooting worse from three than the Lakers. That's an upset. Like,
Harrison, keep in mind, that's front-loaded. The Lakers started the season at 48%. So.
Yeah, I know the second half they've been like last for most of it, so that really does underscore how impressive they were at the start of all this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense, because when you really think about it, like, other than Schroeder, they didn't really add necessarily anybody who brought a completely different dynamic to what the team was missing last year. Like, even someone like Montrezl Harrell, they didn't have somebody specifically like him, but they had options that could score in the front court. They just didn't do it the exact same way that Harrell did it. Like, Schroeder brought a completely different dynamic that this team did not have last year. But fundamentally, their replacement players sort of brought what was there last year. And, you know, the hope was guy like Alex Caruso would finally find a consistent outside shot, that Kuzma would have a consistent
outside shot. Which he did at the beginning and then has fallen off.
Yeah. Right, which is actually not consistent.
It was like right after the wrist injury too, and you wonder how much that has affected him and if that's gone away or whatever.
You know what? Maybe he should spend a little less time shaving his balls. A little more time on the practice.
Unless that's part of the therapy. Wrist motion, shaving balls. I'm just saying, I don't know what his physical therapist / agent has prescribed.
Is this a sneak Manscaped live read?
If they'd like it to be.
Right. It could be.
We're open for business. Just saying. It's absolutely a possibility.
I mean, look, it's the way I shave my balls, Harrison. I don't know if you've found a better way, because I don't think there is one.
No, I mean, look, we're all busy people. Sometimes you got to do your rehabbing and your ball shaving at the exact same time. If he happens to use the same wrist for both the shooting and the ball shaving, perfect.
Does Alex Caruso not strike you guys as an efficiency freak? He does to me.
That's true. He is, look, he's an advanced metrics darling in all cases.
But one doesn't just pile up win shares without the other stuff.
It's interesting. Like, you know, for all the talk about how this year's defensive schemes, for example, are very different than last year's, which is true, I don't think fundamentally they are that much different of a team in terms of their overall composition, other than the presence of Schroeder. So to that point, Brian, I think what you're saying actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, everyone's blind squirrels and nuts, right, guys? All right, so let's look at the second half. Harrison, we'll start with you again. Like, what is the thing? I'm probably tied a little bit to what, you know, your point about the first half, but like, what is the thing that you're kind of intrigued by or looking forward to in the second?
I mean, it's what the team's answers to those questions are. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, who do they sign off the buyout market? Does Damian Jones stick with the team? Does he, like, continue to be, you know, best 10-day signing ever, highest efficiency player in Lakers history? Or, you know, does he prove that he's the guy that got beat out for a roster spot by Frank Kaminsky? Like, I don't know, but I'm curious to see. And I'm curious to see, like, who else gets bought out? Do the Lakers get in on any of these guys? I did think that it was notable today, and it honestly was a bad sign for their ability to get anyone that's actually good. Was you were, you know, if you're rooting for this team to get someone on the buyout market, then you were hoping that the Brooklyn Nets, when they signed Blake Griffin, a player who wouldn't have really fit with the Lakers all that well. Like, I'm not convinced that he would have gotten significant minutes on this team, if at all. Like, maybe he could have turned it around and made it work, but I don't know. And so I don't blame them for not taking the gamble. But, you know, I thought that part of the reason he was going to Brooklyn was that, you know, they have that disabled players exception worth, it's like upwards of $5 million, I think like 5.7 or something like that, for Spencer Dinwiddie. And, you know, you were hoping,
if aside, like, just so people know, the disabled player in this case is not Blake Griffin.
you have to sign an injured player to with that exception. It's like a horrible CBA rule.
Low hanging fruit, guys. Couldn't let it go.
Wow, that was rude.
It was mean. That was really mean. I really like Blake Griffin, and I feel terrible for
that. That was really disrespectful.
That was a really, really mean joke. And
I would go so far as to say that was totally uncalled for.
It was wildly uncalled for.
But
guys,
anyway,
let's talk about Alex Caruso's balls again. Feel better about
that. Like, you were hoping that if the Nets were going to sign a guy, that they would use that on that guy. And then it's like, okay, you know, whatever roster spots they have left, whatever roster spots the Lakers have, they're competing on an even playing field of the prorated veterans minimum. And because the Nets signed Blake to a veterans minimum, they still have that arrow in their quiver where, you know, maybe if they had signed Blake with that disabled player exception, then all of a sudden, like, I don't think Andre Drummond's going to get bought out, but let's say he does. The Lakers can offer just as much as the Nets, at least in terms of money. And who knows, maybe in terms of role, if Blake has found, you know, his kind of niche there as a small ball five or something like that, then maybe that's a real conversation where the Lakers can get in the running for that. But now, you know, if a guy like that gets bought out, not only can the Nets offer him more money, but they can probably offer him a bigger role at center in the, you know, kind of probably, you know, in to quote Brian, basically, like, in the inevitable scenario where Blake does not make a difference because he's a disabled player, according to Brian, like, you know, the Nets will have a bigger role to offer as their five behind DeAndre Jordan.
Guys, I'm not saying he gets to park at a different place in the facility because he's got a placard. I'm just saying he's hurt a lot.
No, look, you can try and defend it now, but we all, no, everyone here
really
heard
mean,
the pot
it was
shot.
A really mean joke.
It was, but I mean, Blake, though, does.
It wasn't a bad joke, though.
Right. I was going to say, I think Blake would actually appreciate the quality of the joke, if not the actual context of the joke.
Right.
But I think he would.
It was a pretty good joke.
Yes, I think he would actually agree with that. You know, as somebody that really does study comedy, I think he would get it.
Yeah,
I mean, look, the history of buyout successes is really low. Like Mark Keith Morris is among the best recent buyout success cases that the NBA has seen in a while. But, you know, if you feel like there are holes to fill, you're right, Harrison. They may not have a ton of options out there. Although what Brian and I have talked about before, and I do think is true, is with a team this good, whoever you bring in off the buyout market doesn't necessarily have to be as good as they would need to be on other teams, because your role in your lane becomes very defined and specific. So it, like, in that sense, maybe they can take a guy that's, you know, a B minus and turn them into a B plus, but you are correct. Their options could be limited.
And that's the other thing too, is just in terms of like the point that I've been making going all the way back to like the Lakers center concerns. Do they need to upgrade on Marc Gasol? Like all this talk is that, you know, when it matters, Anthony Davis is going to be playing center anyway. And so you're not going to be bringing in a guy. And like, what guy are you going to get? Like, tell me, don't just tell me the Lakers need an athletic big. Tell me who, and tell me who they're going to get that is good enough that they're going to play over Trez and they're going to play over Marc Gasol. And I know that like Lakers Twitter has decided that Marc Gasol is a trash G League player and you could sign like DeMarcus Cousins to play over him or whatever, but you just, there's aren't guys available right now that are better than either of those guys, and they certainly aren't better than Anthony Davis as a small ball five. And so, you know, on some level we're just talking ourselves in circles, but I do think that the Lakers need to try and get someone with one of these spots, because it's clear they have some holes in their roster. I just would lean towards probably more of a wing.
All right. Yeah. So first of all, if you're saying go get DeMarcus Cousins to help us with our rim protection because Marc Gasol's doing it wrong, you're doing it wrong. But Andy, what's your second half thing you're looking at?
Anthony Davis's health. Just, you know, when does he come back? What does he look like upon returning? How long does it take for him to get back in the swing of things? And it's not just because of AD's importance to this team. And we saw just how much better this team looks, how unbeatable this team looks when AD takes his game to another level like he did in the playoffs last year, but also because I think in a lot of ways this will dictate LeBron's ability to lay back a little bit before heading into the playoffs and conserve a bit of energy and, you know, allow himself to get like a third wind going into the playoffs, because I don't care what LeBron protests or says, what insists, he's exhausted. You know, like, if you want to say that LeBron is not showing any real signs of breaking down, that's fine. I'm not going to argue that hard against that. But the notion that he's just a cyborg that is incapable of fatigue and doesn't feel it, nope. And where you really see it is his three-point shooting, 27% in February. And if you look at the Lakers splits, in wins, he's shooting 38.5%, in losses, 31%. And that discrepancy, that's the biggest in his splits. Like, otherwise it's more or less the same in wins and losses, but when you consider that he takes nearly 7 threes a game, that discrepancy is a really big dip. And, you know, he takes a lot of threes. Like, frankly, he settles for a lot of threes.
It's in-game load management.
Yeah. Yes. And I get it, but the effectiveness of it will be ramped up if AD can go back to looking like AD, and between him and Schroeder being out there and the other guys just filling their role, LeBron can be a little bit closer to all-star captain LeBron than some of the shit that he's been needed to do over the last few weeks where he's just looked fried. You know, I mean, it also shows in the amount of free throws. He's taken the fewest amount of free throws since his rookie year, or you know, very quietly, well, last season.
To the point that I was making earlier about free throw shooting, which, you know, I've said this many times, and I don't think I makes me a basketball genius to point it out, Harrison. You can be bad at free throw shooting. You can be, you know, you can turn the ball over too much. You can be a bad 3-point shooting team. It's hard to be all three and be a good offense. Not only were the Lakers 29th.
Hold my beer. The Lakers in the playoffs last year.
Right. But like the Lakers this year, they're 25th in free throw percentage. They were 29th last year. they're also getting the line significantly less. Like they're taking, I think, 5 or 6, 7 fewer shots at the line this year a game than they were last year. And so, you know, they're still bad at it, and they're not even getting there with the same volume. So, to your point, Andy, like that's some of that is LeBron, and then a lot of the drop in percentage that they've had is because AD is not shooting them well.
Yeah. So that I think AD's return and the way he looks is very hand in hand with what we'll see from LeBron in the second half and what he has available, you know, after this incredibly fast turnaround in this year's playoffs.
Right. And that really dovetails beautifully into my point, which is just fatigue. Like I'm looking for that place. And this is where AD's injury could be helpful. Obviously a month on the sidelines or whatever it turns out to be is a month he didn't play, and hopefully a month more of energy. They're still not going to ask him to do a tremendous amount of stuff in the second half. And you know, they're going to try to preserve LeBron as much as they can. I think they don't care if Utah wins the conference. They're not going to try to chase him down. I don't think they care if the Clippers are ahead of them in the conference.
The league's going to rig it anyway, so Utah falls. So they don't need to worry.
Right, because the league hates the Jazz.
They got a start on it in Philly the other night, you know, yes, according to Donovan Mitchell. Like,
exactly. Right, yeah.
So, I mean, in that sense, they're covered.
But like this is you were talking about Schroeder. This to me makes Schroeder the most important player that they have in the second half, because
I can see that
aside from AD's health, I'm willing to assume that he's going to be AD in the playoffs, or, you know, there's no reason not to. But assuming LeBron is healthy, I can assume that he's going to turn in a playoff LeBron style performance, assuming they have the energy to do it. And with the short turnaround, Harrison, with the incredible mental fatigue that I think is underrated about this year, I just wonder if they're all going to get to the playoffs with 85% or 90% of what they had in the tank last year with a fresh start. Everybody had months off, and what that means if they're just not quite as fresh as they were last year. That's my big concern for the second half.
And the other thing to watch for, too, as far as AD's health is concerned and not asking him to do too much, like at some point they are going to be up against it here where it's not right away, but depending on how quickly he can come back, you know, at some point you're running up against a wall of like how many games, you know, before the playoffs is too few for him to actually like get in there and get a rhythm and start to ramp up again. Because, again, I don't think that they're that close to that yet, but it is a concern if this is something that lingers or if he comes back and has to go out again. Like, right, you know, it starts to become a real issue if, you know, you only have 10 games or something for him to get a rhythm after basically a season in and out of the lineup and then having to just jump into, you know, super high intensity playoff basketball like we saw last year. You know, that could be a problem. And again, like, you know, he's saying that he'll be back probably about 4 games after the All-Star break, you know, or like their 4-week timeline is implying that he will be back about like the 4th game after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I was confused by that because supposedly didn't it also incorporate like the 4 weeks also incorporated ramp up time, but I was a little confused by it. I'm assuming he'll miss a couple games at least.
Yeah. So, I mean, 4 weeks from that date would be the 4th game. I believe it's against the Hornets after the All-Star break. If he comes back like right on that 4-week dot, which, you know, like the Lakers insisted was not an exact timeline, but Frank keeps saying 4 weeks over and over again. And so I'm assuming it's about as close to an exact timeline as they have right now.
You are correct. It is the Hornets game the 18th of March. So, I mean, we'll be watching for that. And also, too, there will be a lot of worries and speculations, fair or not, accurate or not, if, say, the 18th starts turning into the 20th against the Hawks or the 21st against the Sun, yada, yada, yada. So it'll definitely be heavily watched.
This is where the Lakers and their offense, like, it's like, this is not, you know, we've seen it when he's out and, you know, the burden on LeBron, like there's not really a lot of system here. It's, you have two incredibly talented players that draw a ton of attention and have a ton of gravity, and we let them do stuff. And if you just kind of keep moving while they're doing stuff and if you shoot the ball particularly well, then the Lakers become very, very difficult to beat. But yeah, so they are in a more intriguing place than I thought they would be halfway through the season. I thought by now it would be like, we know exactly what's happening, all good, and let's just, you know, get to the playoffs here, guys. Let's go. But now there's a lot more that's kind of fascinating about these guys than I thought.
One of the bigger things is just, you know, it's like you said, Andy, like they need to figure out a way to incorporate Gasol better on offense and utilize more. And I think that honestly, they were starting to do that before he went out with health and safety protocols for the last two. Like he looked like he was, you know, he was dribbling at least when he got the ball. He was willingly taking threes. Like, you know, these are small things, but they help the offense move. And I think that is starting to make a difference. And I think that they were starting to figure out like and starting to talk him into the idea that, look, we know that everybody around you is really good. You have to do something or guys are just not going to guard you.
Yeah. I mean, the only way he can serve as that high post facilitator most effectively is if he represents at least some threat to put the ball up. Like he has to, just some. He does not have to be Jokic, no. But he can't be Bogut.
Like I just think they finally found a pair of shorts, I think, that fit him better. Like, he's just always tugging at his uniform. Everything looked ill-fitting. Because he's got, you know, he's like, you know, stars are just like us. He's kind of got dad bod. I just think they couldn't find a uniform that fit him. So I think that helped.
I like that theory. I'm with it. I'm sure that was it. They just had to find him a good uniform that fit him properly. The Lakers, you know, they're a mom and pop shop. This stuff is hard. Like they had to put in for an order and get it sent to them like that. You know, I order it from NBA.com. That takes a while to get a custom
jersey. Do you expedite shipping? It's a little bit.
They should have used eBay.
Yes. Yes, they should have, though.
That's right.
It feels like something that could be handled through Wish, but it's another story.
Yeah, all kinds of. There's so many levels. It's hard to run a franchise.
Well, they tried. They tried to get it from Wish, but Wish sent them like a shoddy knockoff, and then that like made the problem worse. And
well, they are switching jersey sponsors next year, aren't they?
Didn't I read that? So maybe that'll fix it.
Maybe that was the problem.
You know what? Wish knows what it did.
Harrison Fagan, he rules Silver Screen and Roll with an iron fist. The content over there is fantastic. I'm just telling you what we've heard from people who work underneath you, who like to speak anonymously.
No, I mean, that's not inaccurate. And I appreciate you guys having me on. I just wanted to say before we get out of here that you guys don't need to have a booker reach out to me. Like you guys can text me anytime to ask me to come on. I know I'm the big head honcho and I could be intimidating the way that I run Silver Screen and Roll with an iron fist, but you know, I consider you guys professional colleagues and
a little disappointed that when we found out that the booker reached out to you, like, wait, we have a booker we're going to get Shaq. We're going to get, you know, Phil. We're going to get Nick. Like, you got us Harrison Fagan? Like, we can get us Harrison Fagan.
Look, they know a rising star when they see one. Shaq, he's old true. News. Like, I'm the future of NBA media, baby.
Awesome, man. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
all right. So thanks again to betonline.ag. Remember, delicious pizza, 20% off when you use Cam Brothers at the checkout. Go check out everything over at Silver Screen and Roll, and we will see everybody next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.